usually when we consume a piece of entertainment, there's a really clear boundary, a wall, basically.
Right.
You watch a movie, the credits roll, you turn off the screen, and well, that's it. The world stays perfectly contained inside the box.
Yeah, it's historically been a very compartmentalized experience. I mean, a game is just a game. A show is just a show. The mediums don't really talk to each other in any meaningful way.
But what happens when that boundary just, like, completely evaporates?
It changes everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When watching a 10-episode animation physically alters the way millions of people interact with a completely different piece of software. You're no longer just watching a show. You're stepping into an entire breathing ecosystem.
Which is incredibly difficult to pull off. I mean, the logistics alone. But when it works, it entirely redefines how fans engage with fiction.
And that transformation is exactly what we're getting into today. Welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here.
It is August 20, 2026, and if you have even a passing interest in digital entertainment, you know the internet is completely buzzing right now. Our mission today is to unpack a massive, highly detailed briefing from Tech and Radar.
Yeah, and it's a dense one.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah.
It covers Netflix's blockbuster Anime NYC 2026 Mega Showcase. We're looking at a comprehensive intelligence report here. I'm talking character matrices, production pipelines, economic impact metrics, the works.
It really didn't hold anything back.
No, they didn't. And the main event, the official trailer, the full synopsis, and the October 20 release date for Cyberpunk, Edgerunners Season 2.
Which people have been waiting for years.
Right. But we aren't just going to look at what was announced. We're going to explore how this specific slate of animation is fundamentally rewriting the playbook for global entertainment.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the sheer scale of Netflix's showcase is staggering.
What's fascinating here is that we have to look at this beyond just an anime announcement. This is a massive strategic maneuver.
How so?
Well, think about what's happened in traditional Hollywood right now. Live-action productions are facing significant slowdowns, ballooning budgets, and frankly, audience fatigue.
Yeah, people are just burnt out on the same old formulas.
Exactly. So by forging direct, high-level co-production bridges with premier Japanese animation houses, Netflix is digging a multi-million dollar content moat.
A content moat. I like that.
Right. They're securing a deeply loyal audience by bypassing the traditional Hollywood machine entirely. They're just handing the keys over to visionary auteurs.
And the crown jewel of that auteur-driven strategy is, without a doubt, Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Edgerunners Season 2. But from the notes here, they aren't taking the easy way out. I mean, they aren't just giving us a sequel that brings back legacy characters like David or Lucy for the sake of, you know, cheap nostalgia.
No, and honestly, they took a massive creative risk here. The joint screenwriting team at CD Projekt Red and Studio Trigger decided to pivot to an anthology-driven approach.
Which is wild for a show this popular.
It is. But it works. We are going deeper into the predatory environment of Night City, right in the middle of a corporate proxy war between the Arisaka and Militech megacorporations.
Okay, so it's a whole new conflict.
Exactly. And instead of familiar faces, we are introduced to an entirely new rogue cell. Four brand new protagonists fighting to preserve their chosen family.
And this whole story kicks off because of the group's newest addition, Roman. And this is such a brilliant setup to me. Roman is just a young, introverted cinephile and an illicit brain dance, or BD, editor.
Yeah, he's not a fighter at all.
Right. Basically, he scrubs raw, recorded sensory feeds for back alley distributors. The kid has absolutely zero combat training.
None.
But he accidentally discovers an unencrypted, classified data fragment hidden inside a corporate assassination brain dance.
Which instantly puts him, and, well, anyone connected to him, in the crosshairs of elite MaxTac liquidation squads.
Oh, man.
He literally becomes the catalyst for the entire season.
So Roman's basically a video editor who accidentally downloads a government hit job file and drags a squad of broken, heavily armed misfits into a war.
That's a perfect way to summarize it.
I just love that concept.
Yeah.
But I noticed something about how they're using Roman's braindance editor job. If we are seeing parts of the show through his editing interface where he's like scrubbing through recorded memories, doesn't that mean we can't actually trust what we are seeing? Like, is the show playing with our perspective?
Oh, it absolutely is. And that fundamentally changes the narrative framing compared to a standard third-person perspective.
How so?
Rather than just watching events unfold objectively, director Hiroyuki Imaishi is placing pivotal revelations inside these reconstructed memory simulations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this allows the animation team to play with surrealist visual distortions, temporal rewinds, and multi-layered perspective shifts. It completely blurs the line between subjective memory and objective reality. You are experiencing the corrupted data exactly the way Roman experiences it.
Which means he has to rely heavily on the rest of this crew to survive the real world, since he can barely tell what's real himself.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the people keeping him alive, because, man, they are barely holding it together themselves. You've got the leader, who goes by the ironic moniker Weak.
Yeah, Weak.
He's a washed-up veteran solo mercenary, once a legendary marksman, but now he is dealing with severe hardware obsolescence. Like, his cybernetics are literally out of date.
And he's suffering from early-stage dementia on top of it.
Right. It's tragic.
His entire motivation is trying to prevent the younger crew members from burning out the way his generation did.
Which is a heavy burden.
Very heavy.
Yeah.
But to protect Roman, Weak has to rely on their primary kinetic strike force, and that's D.
Oh, D sounds terrifying.
She is a vengeance-consumed nomad insurgent. Her entire clan was wiped out by Militech automated convoys out in the Badlands. Now she's in Night City to systematically dismantle their supply chains.
Just a one-woman wrecking crew.
Pretty much. She's using urban guerrilla warfare, vehicle-mounted rail cannons, and heavy magnetic shotguns. It is pure, unchecked fury.
And keeping them all physically patched together is Talia. She is their underground ripper doc and cyber surgeon. Mm-hmm. But she is deeply unhinged.
That might be an understatement.
Seriously. She's obsessed with biological transcendence, constantly replacing her own tissue with black market military-grade chrome. She's got these terrifying multi-jointed hydraulic mantis blades, and she is constantly teetering on the edge of full-blown cyberpsychosis.
And that psychological decline isn't just implied for the sake of being edgy. It's a structural part of the tension.
Yeah.
There is a palpable ticking clock element with Talia. As her mind degrades, you actually see her humanity percentage physically dropping on the crew's biometric monitors.
Oh, wow. So you can see it happening in real time.
Yes. Her mechanical degradation makes every single firefight carry immense emotional weight because she is losing a piece of herself every time she fights.
You mentioned Talia's humanity percentage dropping on the monitors. To actually make the viewer feel that panic, Studio Trigger had to completely invent a new animation pipeline.
They really did.
Let's talk about how this world is constructed, because the technical glossary for this season is just mind-blowing. They're using something called dynamic multi-pass cell shading. Break that down for me. What does that actually mean for you, the viewer, looking at the screen?
Well, it's an animation engineering feat that solves a massive problem. Traditionally, blending traditional 2D hand-drawn line art with 3D background environments looks jarring.
Right. It kind of pops out in a weird way.
Exactly. It doesn't look cohesive. Studio Trigger built a system that simulates volumetric lighting dynamically. So imagine a scene with neon-saturated rain, or holographic advertisements, or muzzle flashes from D's magnetic shotgun.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
This pipeline allows that colored 3D illumination to accurately and dynamically cast shadows and authentic light across the flat 2D character silhouettes.
That's insane.
It really is. It roots the hand-drawn characters physically inside this hyper-detailed 3D world.
They're also rendering the physical toll of all this cyberware directly onto your screen to simulate the character's pain. When Talia pushes her implants past safe thermal thresholds, you, the viewer, experience cyberware feedback loops.
Which is deeply uncomfortable. Yeah.
The animation actually breaks down into chromatic aberration, you know, that harsh magenta and cyan color splitting.
Right.
Along with digital noise scans and auditory tinnitus pulses. Plus, they are utilizing variable keyframe timing.
Which is a brilliant way to convey speed without just blurring the screen.
Exactly. Instead of just making a character look fast, they actually drop the frame rate when a cyborg uses a neural accelerator like a Sandevistan.
Yes.
It creates this terrifying, stuttering visual where they seem to just teleport towards you. It perfectly simulates how an unaugmented human would perceive superhuman speed. You can't track them. They're just, boom, suddenly in front of you.
And we cannot ignore the acoustic architecture supporting those visuals.
Oh, man, I was totally geeking out over the sound design notes.
They are incredible.
They are mixing heavy, distorted analog synthesizers in high-definition Dolby Atmos. But the Foley work, the actual physical sound effects, they collaborated with acoustic engineers to record authentic, massive hydraulic machinery.
Just unbelievable attention to detail.
You're hearing real-world pneumatic drills, jet turbine spool-ups, and the hum of monomolecular wire. Every gunshot is designed to produce a physical impact in your acoustic space.
I shakes a room.
But I have to ask, with extreme wide-angle fisheye lenses, dropping frame rates so characters teleport, split-screen hallucinations, and actual tinnitus sounds blasting at the viewer, is there a risk this becomes too overwhelming or just plain exhausting to watch?
It is an incredibly aggressive sensory experience, yes, I won't deny that.
Right.
But I would argue that this overwhelming sensation is the point.
The point.
Yeah. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this aggressive aesthetic perfectly mirrors the sociocultural critique of the show. Night City is an environment engineered to consume people.
Okay, I see where you're going.
It's a critique of unfettered hypercapitalism and technological alienation. The claustrophobia, the dizzying tracking shots, the overwhelming noise. It forces you to feel the existential vulnerability of these characters.
You're supposed to feel tired.
Exactly. You are meant to feel the oppressive, exhausting weight of a city that devours human warmth and leaves behind hollow chrome.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because that exhausting, claustrophobic feeling, it works so well that it literally saved a video game.
It's a miracle story.
It is. Let's move from the visceral art of the show to its monumental real-world impact. Because this anime basically acted as a multi-million dollar defibrillator to a flatlining game franchise.
It really is a watershed moment in entertainment economics. Industry analysts are calling it the transmedia revolution.
Okay.
If we look at the metrics, we all remember that in late 2020, the Cyberpunk 2077 video game had a catastrophic, bug-ridden launch.
Oh, it was a mess. A massive cautionary tale.
Truly. By 2021, it had a stagnant baseline of fewer than 18,000 concurrent players on Steam.
Which, for a game with a budget in the hundreds of millions, is essentially life support.
Absolutely. It was dying. But then, Season 1 of Edgerunners dropped in September 2022. The emotional resonance of the anime was so powerful that within 72 hours of the premiere, it drove concurrent players in the game past 136,000.
That is just unheard of.
It exploded digital sales by 1,000%, ultimately pushing lifetime units past 30 million copies.
Wow.
The anime single-handedly funded and paved the way for the critically acclaimed Phantom Liberty expansion.
Think about that for a second. Think about the media you consume. How often does watching a show make you immediately want to drop $60 to go interact with that specific software? It's wild.
It doesn't happen.
And the source material highlights that this transmedia triumph permanently altered the corporate DNA of CD Projekt Red.
It changed how they operate on a fundamental level.
Now, they are in pre-production for Project Orion, the full-scale sequel game. And cross-media narrative isn't just a marketing afterthought anymore. Game developers are actively embedded in the animation writing room with Studio Trigger.
Working side by side.
The lore, the factions, the character legacies from Season 2, they are being built in tandem with the game's design documents to create one persistent canon.
And this model offers a fascinating alternative to where the gaming industry has been heading.
Which is usually just squeezing players for every dime.
Right. It replaces the reliance on what gamers call predatory live service mechanics. Instead of nickel and diming players with microtransactions for years to extend a game's profitability, you build a narrative masterpiece in a complementary medium.
You make a great show.
You make a great show. This transforms passive viewers into active community evangelists. They develop a profound emotional investment in the lore.
Which drives the sales.
Exactly. It drives long-term merchandise sales, vinyl soundtrack pressings, and massive digital game engagement. You don't have to trick them into playing. You just tell a story so good they want to live in it.
If CD Projekt Red and Studio Trigger established the blueprint for mature, dark, profitable sci-fi, Netflix is clearly taking notes.
Oh, they are doubling down.
Because they are aggressively expanding that blueprint into entirely new, terrifying genres with unprecedented studio partnerships.
Yeah.
Right after Edgerunners drops, we are getting two massive dystopian projects in November. First up, releasing on November 3, is Deus Ex Machina.
The production pedigree on this alone is historic.
Yeah.
It is a co-production uniting Mapier and Madhouse, two of the most celebrated and usually fiercely competitive titans of Japanese animation.
For anime fans, that's like Marvel and DC pooling their top pencilers and inkers to make one single comic book. It's a monumental team up.
It really is.
And the premise is wild. It's a high-octane, steampunk, revisionist sci-fi reimagining of Bass Reeves.
The historical figure.
Right. The real-life historical figure who escaped slavery to become the first black deputy U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi. But in this series, he is a heavily augmented cyborg marshal hunting down corporate mining cartels and rogue steam-powered automatons.
The aesthetic sounds incredible.
And he's voiced by Academy Award nominee Brian Tyree Henry. They are promising hyper-detailed mechanical animation. You know, intricate steam pressure gauges, clockwork gears, heavy recoil physics, all fused with traditional Delta Blues slide guitar and aggressive industrial dubstep.
It's an ambitious fusion of historical racial oppression themes with future ecological class warfare.
Yeah.
But in stark contrast to that kinetic explosive action, Netflix is also releasing a project called Full Night on November 26th.
Oh, man, this one.
Yeah. This is a deeply unsettling psychological body horror adaptation produced jointly by Sunrise and Shaft.
The premise for Full Night genuinely disturbed me when the brief I like, Earth has lost its atmospheric oxygen, the planet is plunged into perpetual night, and all botanical plant life has gone extinct.
So there's no air.
No air. So how does humanity survive? Through an extreme medical procedure called transfloration.
Which is just nightmare fuel.
Truly. Voluntary human donors have synthetic plant embryos surgically grafted into their vital organs. Over two agonizing years, they slowly transform into oxygen-producing plant-human hybrids.
It is a grueling concept. The narrative follows a young man named Toshiro Kamiya who undergoes this irreversible process just to fund life-saving medical care for his impoverished mother.
Oh, that is so sad.
It is. But the psychological horror sets in when he discovers that the transformed hosts actually retain lingering consciousness long after they've turned into flora.
Hold on. So, because there is no air left, they're essentially turning the lower class into living, breathing scuba tanks for the rich.
Yes.
That is incredibly bleak. And why do you think streaming platforms are leaning so hard into this level of existential dread right now?
Well, this raises an important question about what audiences are actually seeking from their media today. Full Night operates as a haunting, albeit extreme, allegory for anthropogenic climate collapse and late-stage resource exploitation.
Right, tapping into real fears.
Exactly. Audiences right now are navigating a real world fraught with economic inequality and environmental anxiety. They are craving unfiltered emotional truth and philosophical themes that mirror those anxieties.
And they can't get that in mainstream live action.
Not really. Adult animation is currently one of the very few mediums given the creative autonomy and the budget to explore these complex moral compromises without corporate dilution.
It makes sense.
Studio Shaft's surreal, expressionist visual direction captures the psychological dissolution of human identity in a way live action simply couldn't achieve without looking ridiculous.
Okay, we definitely need a palate cleanser after diving into the deepest, darkest corners of the dystopian slate.
Yeah, let's lighten it up a bit.
Corporate liquidation squads, cyborg mining cartels,
Yeah. Humans
turning into plants for oxygen. It's heavy. But looking at the Anime NYC showcase, they aren't just making dark, depressing sci-fi.
No, not at all.
They are making sure there is something for everyone, maintaining broad loyalty without sacrificing quality.
That's a crucial point. They are capturing entirely different audience segments with equally prestigious, uncompromised craftsmanship.
Exactly. Let me just rattle off the rest of this calendar to give you a sense of the sheer variety here. Early 2027, we are getting Blue Eye Samurai Season 2.
Which people loved.
Oh, it won an Emmy. The Emmy-winning series is taking its mixed-race master swordswoman, Mizu, and moving her blood-soaked quest for vengeance from Edo-period Japan to the foggy, cobbled alleyways of 17th-century London.
That is going to be visually stunning.
They are keeping that stunning, stylized 3D animation, but now introducing European rapier duelists and British court intrigue.
Very cool.
Then, in December 2026, something completely out of left field. Lego One Piece.
This is a fascinating experiment.
Right.
It's an official stop motion and 3D modular brick simulation produced in direct collaboration with the Lego group and the original creator, Eiichiro Oda.
It's brilliant. They're using digital brick physics to visually manifest Luffy's rubber powers and devil fruit transformations. Rubber powers made out of digital Lego bricks.
It's just so playful.
It provides a super accessible entry point for younger fans while giving older fans a completely fresh, creative way to see this world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And finally, in January 2027, Sakamoto Days Season 2, a dynamic action comedy about Taro Sakamoto, a retired legendary hitman who now manages a convenience store.
A classic setup.
It promises flawless comedic pacing and inventive slapstick martial arts choreography right in the middle of everyday retail settings. So when you look at this whole calendar, cyberpunk tragedies, historical European duels, and literal Lego pirates, what is the actual strategic through line here for a platform like Netflix?
The unifying factor across all of these disparate genres is deep collaborative governance with the original creators.
Collaborative governance.
Yeah, whether it's Eiichiro Oda supervising One Piece, CD Projekt Red co-writing Edgerunners, or empowering original manga authors to guide their adaptations. Netflix isn't just acquiring intellectual property to churn out hollow, algorithm-driven content.
They aren't just farming it out?
No, they are actively empowering the auteurs and providing world-class animation studios the freedom to execute their specific aesthetic visions without executive interference.
That's rare.
It is. That uncompromised craftsmanship is the through line.
So what does this all mean? It means the fall 2026 slate proves that the era of superficial corporate-mandated adaptations is finally over.
We can hope.
The blueprint for success in the digital age is crystal clear. Prioritize creative autonomy, deeply respect the source material, and trust your audience to handle mature, complex storytelling. Whether you are a hardcore gamer, an anime purist, or just someone who loves a truly great story, you are living in a golden age of visionary animated storytelling.
It is a golden age, undoubtedly. But I want to leave you with one final thought to consider.
Okay, lay it on us.
The transmedia synergy we talked about today, where the anime feeds the video game, which feeds the merchandise, which feeds the community, it is an economic miracle. It revitalized a massive franchise.
It did.
But it also creates a totally closed loop.
What do you mean?
Well, as we move forward into this new paradigm, we have to ask ourselves, are we entering an era where standalone art is a thing of the past? Will every great story eventually be required to serve as just one node in a massive, interconnected corporate ecosystem?
Wow. That is exactly what happens when the boundary between the screen and the world completely evaporates. Think about that the next time you boot up a game, press play on a series, and realize the room you're standing in is just an extension of the world you're watching. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.